now then. I'm going to start off the Snap Judgment proxy episode in two places at the same time, which means our main man can't be in both at once, but do not worry. All will soon be revealed.
When the teenagers kicked my head to pieces, they wiped, I mean, everything, all memory of everything.
When Mark Hogan Camp woke up in a hospital, all he knew about how he got there is what people told him. That five men followed him out of a bar one night, beat him unconscious, and left him in the street. He'd been in a coma for 9 days.
I started to ask questions because I didn't know who I was. I had to ask other people, what was I like? Was I a bad guy? Was I mean? And they would tell me, no, you weren't mean. You're just drunk. You know, you're an all right guy. Did I hurt anyone? No, you just hurt yourself.
Besides losing his memory, Mark also lost the ability to walk, to write, and even for a little while, to talk. They didn't let him out of the hospital for more than a month. When he got home, Mark found old journals and photos that helped him piece together who he was. He even started to get some of his actual memories back. It turned out he had indeed been a serious alcoholic. He'd also been married once, a long time ago, but he'd since been divorced. He found the video of his wedding day, but he had no actual memory of it. There was one thing in particular, though, that was by far and away the most confounding of all the stuff that Mark dug up. This is his roommate describing the moment Mark first opened his closet.
The first night we went home to his apartment, when he got out of the hospital, he sees these whole shelf of high heels. He says to me, do I have a girlfriend that lives here? And I said, no. And he says, well, what's with all the shoes? And I said, well, Mark, those are your shoes. You buy them, you collect them, and you wear them.
It gets stranger by the moment, doesn't it?
218 pair of women's essence. I mean, they wore these. They scuffed them up. I can tell if they're a smoker or not. I should be a shoe detective or something. They were all given to me by women. Yep.
This was the missing piece of the puzzle of the night at the bar. The morning after the assault, the police found the men that beat Mark up and brought them in for questioning. This tape is from an interview with one of the suspects that they brought in.
We were in the bar. The guy said he was a cross-dresser and everything. And I started figuring out he was going to get it. I think Freddie wanted to beat his ass. He was saying, I have no problems with anybody. I have no problems with anybody. That guy didn't do nothing to anybody. I could tell he was being set up.
Since I can't remember what happened in the bar, what led them to beat me up, I was told that I told them I was a cross-dresser.
So I get all angry and stuff, thinking about it. I don't know if I'll start ripping them apart. I don't know if I'm going to want to kill them. And I don't know if it's going to take, like, 8 police officers to shoot me. There's no fair fighting in the person that's been jumped on from behind and every memory kicked out of his head. There's no etiquette to fighting after that.
Mark was in intensive physical therapy and in talk therapy. And then just when he started to get better, Medicaid said they weren't going to pay for the therapies anymore. Mark was on his own.
I figured, all right, well, what's the first thing I got to work on? That's my imagination.
And, like, I've been fighting to get balance and everything else back, you know. I fought for my imagination to get that back. And that's when Monk all started.
One day, about a year after Mark got out of the hospital, he was browsing in the hobby shop when he noticed a doll. It was an action figure dressed in a bomber jacket and khakis, a World War II fighter pilot, and Mark bought it and brought it home to his trailer. Back at home, he went into his backyard and found some scraps of plywood lying around. He built a box, and on the side, he painted Hogan Camps. It was a bar, and he named it for himself, Mark Hogan Camp. The action figure became his tiny alter ego that owned this bar and lived in a town he called Marwin Call.
I just figured I'll be like Sam Malone, you know, in Cheers. You know, he's a recovering alcoholic and he is a bartender. I made my alter ego figure drink only coffee. Because that's what I do in real life, drink tons of coffee.
The more I built and the more I played around, you know, and bought figures and stuff, the more the story just came alive in my head.
Mark decided that Marwin Call was in Belgium during World War II. His alter ego was an American fighter pilot. He didn't just add this kind of detail arbitrarily, though. He told himself stories about the town and the people in it. Like the story of the day Mark's alter ego found Marwin Call.
I came flying over in my P-40 Warhawk on fire, and I saw a flat field down below, and I crash-landed it. And when I walked into town, there was nobody there. And then one by one, beautiful Barbie-looking women started emerging. The SS, I found out later, went through there and killed men. It was like a desolate town. So they came out and they thanked me. And I was the only man in town and 27 Barbies. I was thinking, boy, what a lucky guy I am. So they gave me my own place, my own building, which I turned into a bar.
After Mark built the bar, he added other buildings. And eventually, he actually had a whole little town in his backyard. And these weren't just little rudimentary structures. They were super detailed. He put a bar mirror into his bar, then tiny posters, little beer taps, and even magazines for the Barbies' reading pleasure. Everything was perfectly to scale. Some days, the Barbies wore old uniforms of their dead male soldiers and carried rifles. Other days, they wore heels. Sometimes, both. Even the tiny handguns, about the size of a bottle cap, could be cocked.
I started needing vehicles for my town. And the tires, they look so brand new. They got a little factory seam around everyone. It looks like it just rolled off a showroom. I don't want that. So I started dragging stuff.
He got a toy Jeep for the dolls. He tied a string to it, put the Barbies in it, and he went for long walks, pulling the Jeep behind him. He'd go day after day to wear down the wheels.
The Jeep has 180 miles on it, which is 1,080 miles in 1/6 scale. When I'm even walking, I have to constantly look at my feet. I can't look around like other people do and just walk. And I still lose my balance and stuff when I'm doing that, but I'm getting better at it.
The most important part of Marwin Call, though, were the people. There was Mark and the 27 Barbies, but there were other characters, too. And he just kept adding more.
I wanted people to know about my town and to be part of my town. That's why I started putting people that I know in it, is because I feel so alone here.
if I have an alter ego from people that I know in my town, you know, I'll be surrounded by my friends.
So he added a doll for his neighbor, his old coworkers, even his mom. But the most important character was Mark's doll's girlfriend. She wasn't a person who actually existed in Mark's real life, at least not anymore, but she was loosely based on Mark's ex-wife. His ex-wife's name was Anastasia, and from pictures, Mark knows that she had blonde hair. So Mark added a blonde doll and called her Anna.
I won a photo contest, and with that money, I bought Anna, my favorite female doll. I wish that she would come alive. When I first got the doll, I fell in love with her face so much that I had to paint makeup on her. This is the latest girlfriend that I had 9 years ago. It's the last time I ever felt a woman, hugged a woman, kissed a woman. The first 4 years of that 9 years was because I was a drunk and I didn't care to look for women. I'd just rather drink. And the last 5 years have been me being busy trying to get back my senses. I wish I had somebody to go over and girl preferably to manipulate the female dolls. That'd be neat, playing dolls with a girlfriend. The story, meanwhile, was just going on in my head like, okay, the SS heard about my town, my bar. So eventually, the SS find Marwin Call. And there's nobody around. We all decided to go to the bar, Hogan Camp's Catfight Club, and hide in there. And these guys wanted to know where the bar was. Where's the bar? Want to drink? Because I remember that's the way I was when I was a alcoholic. Guys, I want to drink. You know, I remember that. The SS took me. They tied me up, then started cutting me, and on my alter ego, I put a scar down the right side of my face because this is the side that was damaged in real life on me. So then dolls in my bar heard that the SS had me tied up and they were cutting me to ribbons and beating me up. So Anna took Chris and Jacqueline and traded their uniforms for Barbie clothes. So they went into town with their hands behind their back, and each hand was carrying a pistol. And the three of the girls went into the church, and just like precision surgeon, they eliminated the SS.
Years passed, and Mark just kept adding to the story and to the town. At the end of every story, justice and peace always prevailed in Marwin Call. But in Mark's real life, Mark still spent most of his time alone. He was still scared to leave the house. The main way he got out is when he put his dolls in his toy Jeep, and he went for walks, dragging the Jeep behind him.
When I feel apprehensive, and I look down at the Jeep, and I know they'll protect me. It's dolls. There's a lot of firepower in there, and I make sure to put the correct weapons with the most firepower in there before I take my walks. So just in case, people don't know I'm disabled. They don't know that I won't think correctly. They don't know that I still have psychological problems, like I'm always on guard, always looking over my shoulder, always worried about being attacked again. They just see me on the outside. Outside, yeah, I'm trying to act like a normal human so I don't get attacked again by the stronger ones.
It was on one of these walks that one of his neighbors, a guy named David, noticed Mark. Mark was pulling his little toy Jeep along the side of the road, and David was curious.
I saw him again when he was walking down the street. I drive way up ahead in a park. So I'm sitting there, and I can sense him getting a little closer and closer. I go, hey, you know, how's it going? And he's like, oh, pretty good, pretty good. And he stops and proceeded to introduce me to the people in the Jeep. There were two figures in the Jeep. He says, this is actually so-and-so, who's someone I work with. And this other woman, she's actually an old neighbor of mine. I was like, has anybody else seen this stuff or talked to you, you know? Because you're the first person that ever really stopped and said, yeah, that's interesting. What are you doing or where are you going or what's that all about? The next day, this envelope stuffed with photos, and I opened them up, and I was just astonished by the realism and the feeling. When I went to his house after I saw the photos, I said, you know, do you have any more of these? And he goes, oh, I've got thousands of them. And like, yeah, sure.
Mark actually really did have thousands of pictures, boxes and boxes full of them. Over the past 5 years, Mark hadn't just been imagining the stories. He was actually setting up scenes and shooting them from the perspective of the Barbies. One photo shows Mark's doll tied up by the wrists. An SS soldier is holding a knife and looks like he's lunging at Mark's doll. He's got these bloody cuts across his chest and his head hangs like he's been tied up there for hours. In another photo, from when Mark's alter ego meets Anna and they start to fall in love, they're sitting in the back of the Jeep. Anna lays her head against his chest. Her hand rests on his hand that's slung over her shoulder, and his head leans slightly towards hers. Looking at the Barbies together, it's practically like you can hear them breathing. And there was even a shot where Mark's favorite Barbies dressed his doll in stockings and high heels the day he decided he would come out as a crossdresser in his town. David was blown away by the photos, and he also just happened to be a photographer himself.
Because I'm a photographer, I was curious, how do you manage all your assets and your negatives? And he goes, I'll never even keep the negatives, really. I don't think the negatives, I threw them away. It's funny, I don't think he ever even thought of himself as being a photographer. He was just using a camera as a tool to communicate, and definitely didn't identify himself as an artist. It was all such a genuine thing, and I felt like it was too amazing to not share with other people.
And he tells me that there's a curator of an art gallery that wants to display my photos.
David showed the photos to a friend, and his friend loved them. So they offered Mark an exhibition in New York City. And Mark agreed to it, but he was hesitant.
I'm happy about the whole thing, except the talk of me taking something so sentimental to me and having it on display 100 miles away. It's a very big decision for me to make. It's that subconscious fear that I still have, you know, of being hurt again. That's the biggest fear. I don't want to get hurt mentally or emotionally or physically ever again. So that's why, thank God, there's that other voice in my head that still didn't get broke in that attack, that tells that side that's so worried, hey, come on, don't think about all that stuff. I'm still afraid to go to the city, but that's where courage comes in. I was taught that courage is to face the thing, to do the thing, even though I have such great fear of doing it.
So Mark decides he will go to his opening. He packs his favorite dolls and he heads in to New York City. The exhibition opened and people started to show up. Mark explained the stories to people, he introduced his dolls, and people loved it. The show even got some great reviews in the Village Voice. But Mark, who carried his camera around his neck the whole time, was really happiest quietly taking pictures. Or to be more exact, taking pictures of women's shoes. When it was all over, Mark was just happy to go home to his town.
My mind can't decide what world to go for. Realistic world, but there's dangers out there. People out there are so real, and I don't understand all that. I feel safe when I get in my town. I prefer to live in my world. I want to live here in Marwincall.
Back in Marwincall, his doll starts dragging around a tiny Jeep on a string. And at the wheel, there's a tiny little man, 1/6 the size of Mark's doll. His doll lays on the ground on his belly and shoots photos of his teeny little soldier doll. Then he builds an even smaller little town in Marwincall.
My character in the story had to create something for himself to deal with the trauma that he still had from being attacked by 5 SS and beaten and kicked almost to death. It was a lot of wear and tear on his mind and stuff, so found comfort in building his own little world, his own little town in Marwincall.
Mark is doing a lot better these days, Snappers. In fact, he has a book of photos coming out November 3rd. I highly recommend you check out. The photos are even more amazing than they sound. Go to marwincall.com. We'll have a link on our website, snapjudgment.org. Big thanks as well to Jeff Mainberg for sharing his tape with us. He made a documentary about Mark back in 2010. The original sound design for that piece was by Leon Morimoto. The story was produced by Julia DeWitt.